The mechanism of impeachment is laid out in the U.S. Constitution, but it doesn't come up too often, especially when it comes to U.S. presidents. Bill Clinton, Richard Nixon, and Andrew Johnson found themselves staring at the wrong end of impeachment proceedings, and there have been movements toward impeaching other presidents that sputtered out. Now a few Democrats in the U.S. House are considering filing articles of impeachment. One actually did so in July. But what is impeachment? How does it work? Why is it a part of our Constitution? Cass Sunstein is a professor at Harvard Law School. He's the author of the new book, Impeachment, A Citizen's Guide. Cass, thanks a lot for joining us today.
A pleasure to be here. All thanks to you.
How important was impeachment to the founders?
Indispensable. Without impeachment, there's a good argument we wouldn't have had a constitution at all. It was a necessary response to the argument that the powerful presidency was a return to something for which the American Revolution had been fought.
You write that there was concern that we would have an elected monarch to replace the hereditary monarch of England.
Completely. So under the Articles of Confederation, which followed the successful American Revolution, we didn't have a powerful executive at all, nothing like a president. And so once there was a decision that Hamilton actually helped yield, that is to have a powerful president, the idea was we need to have some mechanism by which we ensure that we, the people, are ultimately in charge in case there's corruption or lawlessness or something terrible. And impeachment is that mechanism.
A big deal then, but you write that impeachment is poorly understood today, sometimes even by members of Congress, the people who would have to put it into action. Why do we not get impeachment now?
Well, one reason is actually fortunate, which is that we haven't had to resort to it much. So if things are working well, it's kind of a thing we have in our pocket that we don't have to take out. And if you don't have to take it out, you don't have to look at it. Another reason is the key term, high crimes and misdemeanors, sounds like a reference to violation of the criminal law. So a modern reader, you might think, well, if the president commits a crime, then he's impeachable. If not, not. That's not really what they were talking about, but it is a tempting modern rendition. And another view is it's just a political thing, as then Congressman Gerald Ford said. And so the kind of constitutional backdrop disappears. We think, what are the politics? That's really where all the action is.
Right. The thought seems to be sometimes that the president would have to knock over a liquor store or something to be eligible for impeachment. Can you talk about the things that it's really there for as you're looking at it in the Constitution?
Sure. If the president knocked over a liquor store, by the way, that would be very sad and reason for thinking what is going on, but probably wouldn't be impeachable for that. What they're talking about with impeachment is not like ordinary crimes, but large-scale abuses of presidential authority. So when you think about impeachment, kind of the best way in is to read the Declaration of Independence. That was against the backdrop of the Americanization of impeachment, which happened in the preceding decades. And it's a bill, it's like Articles of Impeachment, the Declaration is, a bill of particulars referring to abuses of authority. So if the president decides I'm going to abridge liberty, I'm going to start locking people up because of their religion or their political conviction, that's not a crime, but that is a high crime and misdemeanor in the constitutional sense. If the president abuses the pardon power in a terrible way by pardoning people who were involved with the president personally in criminality, and that's like a very extreme case, James Madison said abuse of the pardon power is an impeachable offense. So when you think about impeachment, think about terrible abuses of public trust or of the authority the president has. And it doesn't really matter if the offense that is the basis for impeachment is a technical violation of the criminal law.
You give a bunch of different cases, 21, I think, looking at ones that might cross the line into impeachability, ones that shouldn't, and some middle ground cases. Some of the ones you look at that seem a little tougher relate to incompetence, negligence of presidential duties, that kind of thing. That really could be a ground for impeachment?
I don't think so. So if the president, you know, has a bad year and makes a bunch of foolish decisions, that's not a high crime and misdemeanor. If the president is just doing the job really poorly and things are going sour, well, that's what elections do. They have consequences. So think with impeachment about what Alexander Hamilton referred to as abuses of public trust, and think of that as something like not respecting freedom, or about going to war for reasons that aren't in the ballpark of the warranted, or of conspiring with another country for ends that are not in the interest of we the people here in the United States. That's the kind of thing we're thinking about. Terrible uses of the FBI and the CIA would be impeachable offenses, and by terrible I mean using them in a way that abridges liberty or that involves self-dealing on the president's part and compromises the enterprise of self-government, which was really a theory that was had caught fire in the 18th century here at home.
We're talking to Cass Sunstein, professor at Harvard Law School. His new book is Impeachment, A Citizen's Guide. Cass, talk us through the procedure, the process. What would have to happen for a president to be impeached?
It's set out with some specificity in the Constitution. So the first institution that acts is the House of Representatives. And the way, by tradition, that operates is there's articles of confederation, articles of impeachment that are drafted, and the articles will specify the high crimes and misdemeanors that are the ground for impeaching the commander-in-chief. So it might say, you know, he violated the income tax laws. That, by the way, is not an impeachable offense. So that's not a good ground. But it might say that he abused the war power. And now we're talking. That's more in the ballpark. And there's a list. And then that's voted on standardly by a committee in the House of Representatives, Judiciary Committee, very good candidate. And if there's a majority there, then it goes to the full House. And if there's a majority there, then the president is impeached. So that's by a majority vote in the House of Representatives. That does not mean, importantly, that the president has to leave office. It's in the nature of an indictment. So after the president has been impeached, then the Senate, acting for the only time, really, as a court, the Senate conducts a trial and decides whether to convict the president. And a conviction has to occur by a two-thirds majority. And if that happens, then the president is out. If not, the president is besmirched because he's been impeached, but he still gets to be president.
And you said earlier that it's incorrect to view this, to think of this as a partisan political tool, in theory anyway, but in practical reality, would a party really go after a president from their own party?
Could happen. So I have, you know, enough faith in the robustness of our democracy that if something truly egregious happened, party would become less important than patriotism, and we'd see a weakening of partisan ties. But it is true in hard cases, and you can characterize the Nixon and Clinton ones as hard cases. A lot of people thought they were. Partisanship will play a role, and they played a big role there. By the way, the Nixon impeachment was completely legitimate. There were fair grounds for finding high crimes and misdemeanors, not in all of the articles, but in some of them. The Clinton impeachment was not, and that is a very big disparity, those two. In both of them, partisanship played a role, but to the credit of the Republicans, enough of them shifted in the Nixon matter that it looked like impeachment was overwhelming and overwhelmingly likely, and a number of Republicans were for it.
And you also write in the book about the 25th Amendment alternative, which is different than the impeachment procedure we've been talking about, but the effect is the same, removing the president. What would happen?
Okay, so think of the 25th Amendment as about conditions rather than about actions. So the kind of precipitating event for the 25th Amendment was the assassination of President Kennedy, and the thought was we need kind of clarity if the president lives in a terrible either medical scare or, God forbid, assassination attempt, and is alive, but who's going to perform the job? And what the 25th Amendment does, if the president has a condition that makes it unable for him to do the job, it could be a mental condition, by the way, if there's crippling depression or anxiety or something like that, the 25th Amendment's available for that. The mechanism is the vice president and the cabinet, by majority vote, have to decide whether the president's able to do the job. And it's supposed to be a neutral kind of medical type inquiry. Of course, if there's intense loyalty on the part of the vice president and the cabinet, which is likely, there'll be a real burden on those who want to say the president's unable to do the job. But it is a fully available mechanism for kind of policy neutral, even act neutral incapacitation.
And Cass, as we start to wrap up, part of what you're hoping to do is clear up misconceptions about impeachment, what it is, how it works. What are the most important things that we get wrong when it comes to impeachment?
I think there are two. The one error that is all over, and Congresswoman Pelosi, you know, has been around a long time, it's revealing that she made the mistake, was to say impeachment is about crimes. It's kind of doubly not right, given the historical evidence. There are plenty of crimes that just aren't impeachable. The president shoplifts or jaywalks or even cheats on his income tax. That's not good, but that's not what high crimes and misdemeanors are about. And I think more fundamentally, if the president does something terrible, given the nature of his job, he can be impeached if it's an abuse of authority, even if it's not a crime. So if the president says, I'm just going to pardon people who hurt people of color because, you know, so some lives don't matter, that's completely impeachable, even though that exercise of the pardon power wouldn't be a crime. So the focus on criminality as both necessary for an impeachable offense and as sufficient for an impeachable offense, I think that's error number one.
And error number, there were two big ones, just briefly?
Yeah. The other one is to think that the House of Representatives gets to decide what an impeachable offense is. Not so. The founders fought very hard to make sure that we would have terrible actions being the basis for impeachment and not policy disagreement or partisanship or dissatisfaction.
We'll leave it there for now, Cass. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. A pleasure.
That's Harvard Law Professor Cass Sunstein. We've been talking about his new book. It's called Impeachment, A Citizen's Guide. Coming up, humans are largely to blame for climate change. That, according to a new report from the U.S. government, we'll learn what's at stake, a possible consequences of climate change by region, by city in some cases, and what could change, what opportunities there are to deal with the problem. We'll talk to a co-author of that report. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.